Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I am your host, Connor Clancy, and joining me, as is becoming tradition now, are two lovely people. Kevin Pogorzelski, you are one. Hello.
Hi, Connor. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. A little bit under the weather, but I'm getting through this on the adrenaline that I've received from having ticked off every Serie A club this season.
Yeah, well done.
I have now seen every Serie A club live in the flesh this season, and I'm very, very pleased with myself.
So you should.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. And then also joining us is the ever reliable Vito Doria. Vito, hello, hello.
Hi, Connor. Good to be here. Been a busy week for me away from the pod, but still fitting in enough time to discuss another end of Serie A action.
Well, we're on top of your list of priorities every week, Vito. Let's be honest. I know it. The listeners know it. There's no point in trying to hide it. Okay, guys. Let's dive straight in where the action has temporarily finished for this week, at least because, of course, Atalanta do play away in Cagliari tomorrow. But the biggest game of the weekend was probably Roma-Milan. It ended one each. A lot of people are talking about the referees. I don't particularly want to. Kev, what I want to speak about is Gianluigi Donnarumma to start with, because he looked like the goalkeeper we all thought he was going to be tonight, and it was him that gave Milan a point tonight.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think I've been a little critical of him earlier in the season, and you tend to forget that he's not only young as a footballer, but he's also young for a goalkeeper, and probably won't come into his prime maybe for some time, but you know, he made a couple of stunning saves, particularly the sort of double one to then deny Dzeko on the second attempt, and absolutely clean out his defender at the same time. And it's that sort of confidence and indecisiveness that you want to see from him, because that was the mistakes he was making earlier in the season. He was coming for stuff that he probably shouldn't have come for, flapping at a few crosses. And it's nice to see him back playing as he was when he first broke into the team, really.
What do you think the issue was then? Because we all know he's always had this ability, right? But for longer than perhaps a normal dip in form would last, he was quite below the standards that he had made us expect of him. And is it just because of what was going on behind the scenes?
No, I think there'll be an element of what was going on with his contract issue and the potential move to Juve. But I think also it's slightly what you've just mentioned. It's the standards that he set when he came into the team. He'd never really had a gradual progression to becoming this, you know, this excellent keeper. You know, he took the place of goalkeepers far senior than he is. You know, and was stunning, quite frankly. And I think it's just that. You're making a rod for your own back, because you're going to have to maintain those, you know, that level of quality.
Yeah, Vito, do you think it was just something that's to be expected, especially because Kev did say he's a young guy and he did just set the bar so high for himself from the first second?
That's what happens when expectations are placed on young players, especially Italian ones, and they have to go through that experience. I reckon the contract situation with him did not help, and I reckon that was more of an issue than anything on the field or on the training ground. Now, this season, we are seeing him back into the form that we've known from him when he started, and hopefully it continues because he is still, in my view, probably the best young Italian goalkeeper going around.
Yeah, there was a trend throughout a lot of last season, after he had annoyed the Milan fans, basically, up until Christmas, maybe, where people were quite fond of saying that he's not even in the top, I don't know, two or three young Italian goalkeepers. But Kev, in the cold light of day, he's outstanding when he's on it, and he is the future of Italian goalkeeping.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, looking back at some of the other games this weekend, when you see that Juve made the move for Perrin, and obviously mainly they mainly do play Szczesny, but, you know, if I was them, I probably would have made another attempt at Donnarumma, because, you know, Perrin could have gone and filled that role at San Siro if needed. You know, and it would have been, maybe it was a bit too close to be like the investment that they made in Buffon decades ago that paid off really, really well for them.
If we are going to talk about signings, let's talk about this January, because Vito, Krzysztof Piątek has gone to AC Milan, and boy, has he hit the ground running there. He got himself two goals in midweek, and he scored another one tonight, and he's just picked up where he left off at Genoa.
Absolutely. I'm glad that he has left the dark side for somewhere where the grass is a bit more greener. But he's definitely maintained that form. And he just looks like a natural goal scorer. He doesn't seem overwhelmed by expectations or his age. He's just got that natural instinct that you'd expect from an out-and-out striker. And, you know, his technique can be quite clean at times too. It's not like it's always in a rush. And in that particular moment where he scored from Paqueta's assist, I think it was just very smart of him how to make that run and just stick his leg out.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. I remember, I think it was in the first round of fixtures. Or no, it was the second. The first round of fixtures this season was at Torino. The second, and basically every round between the second and sixth, I was in Genoa, either watching them or Samp, and I saw him a lot, and it just kind of blew me away how clinical he was, because he's not always the most involved, but if the ball comes anywhere near him and he's within 30 yards of goal, you expect him to score. There have been some interesting comparisons. We put up on our Instagram page quotes from Gennaro Gattuso and Hernan Crespo. Gattuso compared him to Jean-Dal Thomason, whereas Hernan Crespo compared him to Andrei Shevchenko. Kev, you're of an age that you would have seen the two of these guys not only finish but start their careers. Do you think those comparisons are fair?
I think that was a backhanded compliment. But, yeah, no, Jean-Dal Thomason, I didn't see a great deal of, I must admit. But Shevchenko, I don't think Piontek's quite at that level just yet. I'm trying to recall when Shevchenko broke into the Dynamo Kiev side, even though he benefited for having a really good partnership with Sergei Rebrov. But there was the thing that I found really impressive about today's goal against Roma is if you just watch Piontek, he does almost a little skip where he knows that he's then on his toes to make the run in, and he doesn't make the run too early because that would alert Fazio to the fact that he would be in position to take the cross. And it was all about the time, and it wasn't the most, you know, exquisite of finishes. It, you know, it was a little scrappy, but it was all about the run and the timing to deceive the centre half, because Fazio will get blamed for not tracking him, but it was about the, he almost hesitates if you watch it back. And I thought it was really, you know, really impressive, showing that's what he's got really, that maybe gets him into the scoring positions as to why he's been so prolific.
Yeah, it's the type of thing we've seen from, funnily enough, Gonzalo Higuain over the years. He's not always the most mobile, but when he moves well. But Kev, Shevchenko broke through at Kiev when he was 16, and the following season he was their top scorer. So maybe Piontek's not up to that level.
No, maybe not then.
Vito, you must be quite happy because this is an undoubted talent. He's clinical, he's lethal, he's unbelievable, he's strong, he's powerful, he's intelligent. And you can enjoy him now.
Yes, I can. You know, I don't have to watch him play for Genoa. He's out of there. And I think the way AC Milan is as a club now, with the Elliott's investment group involved, the change of the board of directors, and there have been some additional signings to the squad as well, not just him, I think he'll do well. And, yeah, I can praise him a bit more. I think he's great for Serie A.
Oh, me too. I really like him. And it's one of those things that people who, even people living out here that don't watch Serie A, they always ask, what's this Piontek guy like? It's nice being able to speak about someone that not everyone sees, even though there is a lot of hype about him. Kev, if we're going to talk about Roma, we missed a little bit, given that we record on Sunday nights, because we slaughtered them last week for conceding three goals in the second half against Atalanta, or three goals after the 44th minute against Atalanta. And then they went and, with a pretty strong team, conceded seven at Fiorentina. And I was kind of expecting the floodgates to open a little bit again today, but they didn't. They kept it to one. And it's so hard to work out. Are Roma as terrible as the 7-1 would suggest? Or was that a complete freak?
I don't think it was a complete freak, because they have the ability to sort of throw in a performance like that. But when you look at, you know, the way we're halfway through the season now, and they were only a point off Milan going into tonight's game, and they were sort of fair for their point that they gained tonight as well. They maybe even shaded it ever so slightly. And then that's where I think that Di Francesco is getting a bit of undue criticism, because it probably, you know, if they're a point off fourth place, it probably shows that that's about their level. The argument there is, you know, should they be pushing the likes of Napoli harder than they are, because Napoli are 14 points now ahead of Inter, so they'll be nearly 20 points ahead of Roma.
Yeah, thereabouts. The margin looks pretty bad these days, and the way the league is looking, it looks like that third is the new first. Juve is clearly on top at the moment. Napoli are streets ahead of Inter, and looks like Inter are slipping. So I think there's an opportunity not just for Roma, but for a few of the others like Milan, Atalanta, Lazio, and maybe even Sampdoria to really put pressure on Inter for that third spot.
That's a good point, that, because we've been saying for, I don't know, since maybe October, that the Champions League places are going to be well up for grabs this season. And we just assumed that it would be Juve, then Milan, or then Inter and Napoli fighting for second, and then it will be that fourth place that was up for grabs. But now, Inter seem like they might have taken their eye off the ball a little bit too much, and maybe it's going to be first and second are locked down, and even as high as third is up for grabs. I know I'm looking at Atalanta now. Atalanta are still 8 points behind Inter, though they do have that game in hand tomorrow night. Samp are 7 points. So it is quite a big gap, but you don't know, because Inter just don't look bothered anymore. And it's really strange. And Kev, it looks like Spalletti is kind of running out of ideas there.
Yeah, well, you know, we've said it for a while now that he's under pressure because there's some other fairly high profile ex-Inter managers, if we think of Mourinho, that will be sort of sniffing around, or certainly the media would like to kick up those rumours, I think, if they come about. But the team just, they almost play like robots. You know, we've noted on countless occasions the lack of creativity. And it's almost they're doing, it looks like they're doing almost exactly what's asked of them. You know, almost as though he hasn't got a plan B at the moment.
Yeah, it is strange. But what was striking tonight, Vito, I'm sure you'll be on board with this, is Inter needed a goal. So what was their plan B? It was to bring on Andrea Ranocchia as a makeshift striker. And I just thought back to, do you remember when David James came on as a striker for Manchester City all those years ago? It was the same. Andrea Ranocchia is a bad defender. Why would you put him up front? It's not his position. Vito, I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, throughout his career, he's actually chipped in with the odd goal. So, you know, he does have his moments. But when you need someone like Ranocchia to take a well-struck volley and then force a save out of Skorupski, that is extremely concerning. And it makes you wonder what are Icardi and Lautaro Martinez doing to really rectify the situation? And if we go into the specifics to the 1-0 loss to Bologna, Icardi only had one good chance earlier, if that, and then Martinez was wasteful with at least two chances. So, yeah, it's very concerning when your main scoring outlets aren't putting the ball in the back of the net, and then your worst centre-back has probably your best chance to score.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we'll leave it for that game because we did have Dov Schiavone at the San Siro. He was also at the Juventus Stadium. Dov, you were at the Stadio Giuseppe Meazza this evening and the Allianz Stadium the night before. So we'll start with the Inter game. And what struck me was the Inter fans weren't too happy. But I want to know, is there anyone that they don't hate at the moment?
Well, Mr. Clancy, it looked like they don't hate Rodrigo Palacio. They like him. He got a wee clap when he went off. I think he did a wee heart sign as well, but I think in the TV pictures they cut away when he did it. He did a wee heart sign when he was getting subbed off as well. They like him, but that's pretty much it. from the people that were on the field on Sunday night. They don't like Mihailovic. He got booed. Obviously, he played for Inter, but then managed Milan. So he got booed when his name was read out. So did Perisic. So did Nainggolan. They even did the curva, because the curva was their first game back since they're banned for being racists. They even did some wee monkey chants, but they were going boo, 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 when Mbaye and Perisic had a wee thing about a handball later on in the game, and then the rest of the stadium tried to clap to try and tell them to shut up, kind of thing, to try and kind of go over it. So hashtag write it, don't say it, Clancy. Write it, don't say it.
Well, you've your little badge now, don't you?
I got a wee badge. Yeah, when they did their wee campaign.
What was probably the worst attempt at tackling racism was to hand out these badges and to put all the signs up when the people who were
I see you say this, right? But it's really smart. Tell you why, because if the curva do it, Inter can just turn around and go, oh no, it's our campaign, and then nothing happens to them. No, I'll be serious. It's smart. So they try and do it to try like what's it they do to reclaim the word almost,
yeah,
to reclaim it. But then if the curva do it like they did on Sunday, they can just go, oh no, it's part of the campaign.
All right, we'll see if something comes up in the week about the boo boo boo.
Yeah, no, nothing. Well, nothing will come up about it, because I don't think many people noticed, because the rest of the stadium got on it quickly in terms of cheering. And
you see that happen a lot here, actually, don't you? It's only since I've been going to games every week that I notice it pretty much all the time. But if it's only a small few group of people, it doesn't get picked up ever.
Yeah, well, I had to get told afterwards about it, because I thought they were moaning, that they were like the crowd were jeering, because it was kind of like they were kind of clapping and jeering and cheering and all the same thing. I thought they were moaning at Perisic, because basically they had done, and it looked like kind of when I just seen him put his hand up, so I thought that he kind of was saying something to the crowd or something like that. But then obviously it was afterwards I kind of realised what they were doing after kind of watching the close-up TV pictures and talking to a few other people as well. But yeah, it was interesting.
Something else that was interesting was the decision that Luciano Spalletti made to to put the frog on. He was without a goal. He needed someone to score a goal. So who better to do it for him than his fourth choice defender?
When he went on, and I think everybody watching the game was thinking, oh, he's got Spalletti's going to play three at the back. That would look to me like that's what he was going to do. He's going to play three at the back, push wing backs up, and get kind of more people in through the centre. But Ranocchia then didn't go into defence. He stayed up front. I was like, wait a minute, they're playing Ranocchia up front, which is it shows you the lack of depth that Inter have got in that position. They've got essentially their two strikers are Lautaro and Icardi. Everybody else is a winger or like an attacking midfielder. They haven't got any, and even Lautaro, I mean, it's even arguable you can actually call him a striker as well. And then when you're it shows you just the lack of depth in that area when you're playing a defender who can't even get in the team in his specialist position. So he specializes as a defender, and he is their fourth choice at that. However, he's their third choice striker. So maybe he should reinvent himself, get back that captain's armband that he lost. Who knows? But to be fair to him, he almost scored. He forced a good save from Skorupski, but it was a bit desperate,
desperate there, doesn't it?
Right now it is, yeah. It's almost like there's a dark cloud hanging over everything kind of there. Like, there's obviously the speculation over Spalletti, there's obviously the racism stuff, there's Perisic wanting to leave, then the Kurva hate him for that, then there's Nainggolan, does he want to stay, does he want to leave? Does he want to go out and get wasted? Who knows? Nobody knows.
Nainggolan just doesn't want to be a footballer.
Not enough important people listen to this. The reason he's unhappy is because he's not allowed to go out anymore.
At all?
Nope. He's been told he's not allowed. After the stuff that happened over, I think around Christmas, he's not allowed. So, and we all know how much Raja Nainggolan likes to go out, Conor Clancy.
We do.
And he's not allowed anymore, so he's unhappy. I'd be like me taking away your love for Atalanta. So you're not allowed to love Atalanta anymore,
and then just like,
you'd be depressed. You'd be sad.
I would be sad.
So it's like that. Nainggolan likes to go to the club.
I tried to get a move to a lesser Italian football website, and there are plenty.
Do they got the games though, Conor Clancy?
That's why they're lesser. So they lost to Torino last week and they were poor. They got knocked out of the Coppa Italia in midweek, and then they've lost to the worst team I've seen this season every time I've seen them play. But okay.
Bologna are good now. Bologna are good.
Calm yourself down.
They're good now. Did you receive my video? They're good. Mihailovic has sorted them out.
Is it just going to get worse for Inter before it gets any better?
I don't think so. I mean, it's not bad just now anyway. Like, the thing with the Coppa Italia thing was they wanted to win a trophy, but more than that, I think, to stop Juventus winning the treble. Juventus aren't in the Coppa Italia anymore, so Juventus aren't going to win the treble, so Inter kind of still have that kind of flag to wave at Juve. Third in Serie A is better than last season, and that's pretty much nailed on. They're not going to get second, but they're not going to drop into that kind of fourth spot race. So fine, brilliant. And then again, their first season back in the Champions League, fourth in the pots for the group stages. They did well. They should have went through. They didn't embarrass themselves. So, well, it's fine. Like, what else do you expect them to do? They can't win every game. At this point last year, they had a blip as well where they were just rubbish for a few games. So, I mean, they've got Parma next. Then they play Rapid Vienna, Sampdoria. So, they'll be all right. They'll be fine. They just need to calm. They just honestly need to calm down and just kind of sort themselves out a little bit, kind of dust themselves down and just kind of reset almost. I mean, Spalletti was saying after the game about his mentality, and I think Ranocchia said it as well. It's all a psychological thing. It's a mental thing that he's been mourning about since he bloody joined the club. So you just think, right, if there's a mental that you need to sort out, either the coach sorts out, bring somebody in to sort out, but there's a mental problem in that club. And I think it's not just the players. I think it's something that kind of, when we've done our inter specials with Nima, he said that the club's crazy. It's always been crazy. And Spalletti has kind of brought everything together almost, and everybody's pulling in the right way. But there's still that kind of...
Well, it's Pat's at Inter, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, there's still that there. It's in the club. And they just go a bit crazy and they overreact. And I think just take it. Just relax. There's nothing else that they can do this season. They're going to finish third. A Europa League run? Like, do they really care that much about winning the Europa League? Like, really, really? Probably not.
No.
So, what else are you going to do? You're going to finish third. It's fine. You're going to get the Champions League again. It's fine. So, just relax. Buy a striker. There you go. Right, I'm done.
Striker. Okay, I'm just looking. Inter have lost 6 games this year, which is more than Torino.
Yeah, but they've won more than Torino.
I know, yeah. But it's crazy that they've lost that many. Torino lost a few, maybe.
Yeah, but Torino defend. I think you've seen that against Spal. Torino defend. Whereas Inter obviously are expected to go win games.
But Inter don't. Inter defend too.
Nah, to be honest, today they didn't defend. Against Bologna, they didn't defend. They're just inept up front. They should have had at least 3 goals. It wasn't like 3 half chances. It was 3 like 4/5 chances or 7. Like there should have been goals, and they're just not going in. So I think give it a couple of games, and those chances, instead of being like 2 inches the wrong side of the post, will be 2 inches the other side of the post, and we'll all be talking about how brilliant Inter are again, like we were at the start of the season. So. Football's a bit reactionary. Like a couple of bad games. We're like, oh my God, it's crazy. We need to sack Spalletti and do this and do that. No.
Speaking of reactionary, Dov.
What is it?
Juventus. They've lost to Atalanta.
They're rubbish. They're rubbish, mate. They're as well just giving up now. Relegate them.
Allegri out.
Ronaldo, what a waste of money. Terrible. What are we going to do?
What happened in Turin last night?
Allegri said it. They switched off. In the last 15 minutes. Literally just switched off.
Is this because they didn't have that elite? They didn't have Bonucci, Chiellini?
No, I think Chiellini is the thing.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen that against Atalanta. Before Chiellini went off, they were fine. As soon as Chiellini went off, it was like, oh my God, here is Duvan Zapata. And then it was kind of, obviously Chiellini didn't start, and you had Martin Cáceres, who is not that the Juventus's level, and Rugani, who I think you're kind of struggling to make a case for him being at Juventus's level and having potential, because he's not come on since he's moved to the club.
He's gone backwards.
Well, I wouldn't say he's gone backwards. He's just kind of stagnated. He's had 2 years of essentially not playing football, so he's not going to get any better. And then you let a guy go, Benassia, in January, who was arguably Juve's best player last season, and probably should be playing in the central, or should have been playing the central defence alongside Chiellini. And he gets annoyed because Bonucci's getting that game time and Benassia wasn't. So he's like, right, fine. Toys out of the pram, I'm going to go and earn loads of money. Where is he? In the United Arab Emirates or Qatar or something like that. Or Saudi Arabia. So he's going to earn loads of money. So you're thinking, right. And then you bring in Martin Cáceres. Martin Cáceres isn't very good. There's a reason to let him go.
He wasn't even playing for Lazio.
Well, he just went there, did he not? He just went there in Jan. Like, yeah, the start of, was it the summer he went there?
Yeah.
So he can't get a game for Lazio. And they wanted Bruno Alves from Parma. Like, they actually, that was the serious bit for Bruno Alves, but Parma said no. So you're kind of thinking they're scraping the barrel a little bit. But the thing is, again, the same thing with Inter. When Chiellini's back, when Bonucci's back, when Alexandro's back in the team, Chesney and Perin, you can swap one for the other. They're essentially the same. They'll be fine. It's just kind of one of those things. It's so surreal to watch Gervinho like do an amazing backheel and score, and then in the last kick of the game, he's free in the box and he's got the whole goal to aim for, and he smashes it straight at the keeper. And it just so happens that the keeper kind of didn't manage to save it. But
he's funny, isn't he? Because he's so difficult to stop.
Because he doesn't know what he's trying to do.
Exactly.
He doesn't know what he's trying to do. So how the hell is a defender supposed to work out what he's trying to do if he doesn't even know what's going on?
Yeah.
It's funny to watch because you can see the defender go, right, well, he's going this way, all the way. And then he's kind of like falling about. Oh, man, he's falling about. No.
But obviously, I've been to Parma quite a few times this season.
Why is that, Conor Clancy?
I'm living here, mate.
You put it where? In Italy?
Yeah.
How do you go? Do you go to the games?
I do. Are we doing this? Yeah, I do.
Of course, we're doing this. I'm sure you did it on the podcast without me.
Yeah, of course I did. Start and finish the pod with that line.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, right. What were you going to say? Back to it. Because we go to the games, I've seen Gervinho in the flesh quite a lot. And I've seen him
at the games on Saturday at the Allianz Stadium at Juventus in Turin.
Yeah, I know you did. Will you shut up for a minute and let me speak? But that goal Gervinho scored against Cagliari when he beat four players and then nearly messed up the shot at the end because he hit the inside of the post, but it went in. That sums him up because he just puts his head down and runs, and it's like every touch is miscontrol. So he doesn't know where any touch is going to go, and he just reacts to it. But as soon as his teammates see that he's beaten one player, they just go. They don't know where they're going, but they all just go because they know something will happen.
Yeah.
And defenders absolutely crap themselves when they see him run at them.
No, pretty much. That's essentially what it is. Like, he got a few opportunities and he was good. And Roberto Inglesi had a good time against the Juve centre-backs. But Kuchka, who obviously just signed for Parma, he was impressive. I really liked him. Like, he was kind of... He was driving the game forward. I think he assisted Barilla's goal, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Barilla's goal he assisted. And I think he tested Perrin a couple of times in the first half as well. Like, he looks like he could be a good sign-in for Parma.
He's exactly what they needed, because Leo Stulak can do that, but he's got a bit of a disciplinary problem. Like, he's a bit mad.
Kuchka used to be a bit mad.
Yeah, but Kuchka's matured a little bit.
Well, he's a dad now. He did hashtag dad life on Instagram today.
You following on Instagram then?
I know, I've got a tiny football follow him on Instagram.
Do we?
I've not. Yeah, apparently so, yeah, I didn't realise either. But
who's done that?
I don't know. I blame Vieri.
Alright. Yeah, but he's exactly what they need. I think I tweeted that he'd be a good sign and I stand by it. Think
he'll
be good.
Yeah, well, yeah, he did it against Juve, but I think, again, same thing like I said with Inter Juve, they just people need to relax about like, kind of Allegri out. Like, what the hell? Like, Allegri out, what else do you want him to do?
I know.
Like, he's literally, like, he's unbeaten so far this season, right? Okay, the Coppa Italia, but again, it's something he's won the last 4 years. Who cares? Like, Juventus want to win the Champions League.
I think he cares, though. It, like, Juventus cared about that because they sent out a very strong team. So they weren't taking it lightly.
Yeah, but yeah, it's right. They sent out a strong team, but then it's about motivation as well. Like, how much do they really care about the Coppa Italia? Like, if there's one competition you can really not be bothered about, it's the Coppa Italia. But again, they've got Serie A wrapped up, and it's about the Champions League. I think the one thing I will say about it is, like, some of the defensive issues and kind of the lack of concentration, which is something that is a problem they've had all season. They've got away with it in a few games more often than not. It's where they just switch off. Like, they did it against Genoa. They switched off and they drew that game. But a lot of the... pretty much every other game they've played, they've switched off, but they've got away with it because they've been that far ahead. And I think when they do play Atletico, they can't afford to do that because Atletico will punish. And again, Atletico won't concede as much as well. So I think that's a little bit of a worry. But
this is it. Adam Digby, actually, friend of #FIF at the games, was saying on Twitter this week how there's two sides to this argument and both of them are kind of wrong. One side is Allegri needs to get sacked immediately, whereas the other is everything is perfectly fine. Whereas the truth is somewhere in the middle. Because yeah,
that's
because
Adam sits on the fence. Hmm? No, but he's right. He's right. There's somewhere in the middle. Allegri maybe he needs to sort out the kind of issues that they're having mentally. I think he needs to rest Ronaldo as well. I think Ronaldo's played in every single game.
Yeah. Which
I think he's maybe had one or two where he's been on the bench, but he's came on. It needs, like, Ronaldo, when Ronaldo was at Real Madrid, when Zidane was there, the first season, I think, Zidane said to him, right, you're not going to start every game. Basically, the away games, he was like, right, you're not playing the away games. You can play the home games, take it easy, relax, but you're not coming to the away trips. It's too much. And then when you get to the end of the season, you'll be fresh for the kind of run-in of either Champions League, La Liga, or whatever. And then they won three Champions Leagues in a row because Zidane told Ronaldo, this is what's happening. And because he's Zidane, Ronaldo, listen, Allegri, I don't think Allegri has that air about him. He obviously doesn't, because Zidane's Zidane.
When Ronaldo signed for Juve, we thought that he'd be rested in a lot of the Serie A games. But when Juve played Atalanta on the 26th of December, Ronaldo didn't start, and that was the first time he hadn't started all season. The only other minutes of Serie A he missed were the 16 at the end of the Fiorentina game when he came off early because they were 3-0 up.
Yeah, so he played in a Coppa, didn't he, as well? He's played every game, and I think that could be a mistake because he's almost 34. Like, as much as he's like he is a robot. Like, you need to manage his fitness throughout a season. But again, you can kind of break that down and say, well, he's probably not need. To, he's not really kind of doing that much running. Mandzukic does all his running for him. He's playing against a lot of crap teams in Serie A, so it doesn't really need to bother that much. So it might be all right. But I just think, give him a rest. Just let him have a week off. Like, one weekend, just say, right, take it easy. You're not going, you're not travelling to Frosinone or whatever, or you're not travelling to Udine or something like that. Just take it easy. They don't need Ronaldo to win the games in Serie A. So, yeah, I don't think Juve fans should be too worried. But domestically, I think I'd maybe say in the Champions League, the issues that we've kind of seen and the injury problems and stuff like that, I think those could maybe be a problem. But still, they've got Ronaldo. So even if they are a problem, he could score a hat-trick and it doesn't matter.
He likes playing against Atletico Madrid.
And he does like playing Atletico Madrid, indeed, he does.
Yeah, he'll be all right. All right, Dolph, thank you.
No worries, no worries at all.
Where are you off to next week?
Where am I off to next week? I've got the big one on Friday, Chievo against Roma, and then a bigger one on Saturday, Fiorentina against Napoli.
I've a great weekend next weekend.
Yeah, you're seeing the two Milan teams.
And I'm seeing a game in between as well.
Oh, you're going to see...
Yeah, I'm going to Parma, Inter, and then I'm
Atalanta Spa.
Throwing away my accreditation and my credibility to go to Atalanta Spa.
Exactly. Well, credibility. You had credibility.
Yeah, of course. Then I'm becoming a professional again for Milan Cagliari. So that's going to be a good weekend.
Yeah, it could be a good weekend. Atalanta could be in fifth place by the time you get to that game. So
yeah, well, they could be a point off fourth place. So let's hope so.
Imagine.
They won't be Atalanta. Because Atalanta do this. They smashed Inter 4-1 and then threw away a 2-goal lead to lose 3-2 to Empoli. So they'll lose to Cagliari tomorrow night.
It's because Cagliari have got King Walter of Bursa, so you're screwed.
Pavoletti loves the goal against Atalanta too, so it's a recipe for disaster.
You might win the Coppa Italia. Did you see, actually, there was a thing on... I can't remember where I've seen it. It was doing... What year were Atalanta formed?
1907.
Right, add like 59 to that or something, I think. What's 59?
1907 59 plus 7 is 67. Right. No, 65.
Right, add 56.
Fuck's sake. Like next, 2021.
No. Add 56 to 19 or whatever when Atalanta were formed.
Oh, 1963. That's the year they won it, right?
Right, and if you add 56 to 1963, what do you get?
Oh, it's this year.
Yeah.
Magic. Atalanta are winning the Coppa Italia.
Every 56 years.
Thanks for that, maths at 3:30 in the morning, Bob. I appreciate that.
That's what all the listeners have been waiting for, really.
After a long day.
Hold on. I need to plug something before we before you go away. There will be an interview on the kind of midweek. Actually, I'm going to plug two things. So sorry, Connor. First off, go and listen to the podcast I did with Colin O'Brien, a fellow Irish chap like yourself, about Roma and why Roma are the way they are. It's really interesting. It's really interesting.
Did you tell him you were recording him this time?
I did, yeah. He made that a prerequisite before he would talk to me.
Good.
So yeah, he did that. And then this week we have an interview with Juventus woman central defender Petronella Ekroth. So she's going to tell us about what it's like being a women footballer coming from Sweden to Italy and kind of all the things that's happened in Juve women's team and stuff like that. So,
right. Yeah. Well, while you're plugging stuff about women's football,
just plugging stuff.
I've got an article that I'll be writing this week about an Irish women's footballer who is playing for Florentia in Florence.
Oh, there we go. Look at this. Hashtag equality.
There you go.
Yeah, there All you right. go. Right, that's that it. Plugs are done.
Plugs done.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go.
Where can they see these things, though?
Well,
don't just tell them to go and get them. You have to tell them where.
Well, I assume if they're listening to this, they have been to ForzaItalianFootball.com. I would hope so anyway.
You're giving them too much credit.
Don't say that. These people are highly respected and valued members of the listening/reading/watching audience.
ForzaItalianFootball.com.
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all that.
I'll
rubbish.
Do that at the end of the pod. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, right. Very good. All right, got our clients. It's a pleasure, as always.
Thank you, Dov. And then, guys, we can look briefly at Juve Parma because I have spoken to Dov about it, but this deserves analysis from us too, I think. I want to talk about Bobby English, to be honest, because he's quite unsung. He was getting praise on the commentary the other night, and I thought he was quite good. He's been scoring goals for Parma. He's linking everything together there. Gervinho gets a lot of the praise because he does the sublime, but without Inglese, Gervinho can't do what he does. And he's been awarded with an Italy call-up, if I'm not mistaken. I've got the squad here.
He's in the team.
He's in the team, yeah. So it's deserving, Vito. Are you happy to see Roberto Inglese in there?
I do believe he deserves a place in the Italian squad. And compared to some of the other strikers that have been called up in recent times, I think he's justified it with his work ethic and he has a decent amount of goals too. Whereas you compare him to his former Carpi teammate, Kevin Lasagna, who's at Udinese, he's been rubbish And I'm puzzled as to why he's even in the squad.
I don't understand that either, because he's been in a couple. Mancini obviously quite likes him, but I can't wrap my head around what he has done this season to warrant selection. But Kev, I wrote about Juventus last week, and the piece got more reads after they threw away their lead against Parma than it did in the few days building up to the game. But they started with Leonardo Spinazzola, Martin Caceres, Daniele Rugani and João Cancelo as their back four. And that's quite problematic, as was proven evident by them conceding three goals. But were they too quick to let Benatia go? Like, because they haven't got all that depth. Bonucci's been disappointing this season at times. And have we just assumed that Juventus have this depth that they don't actually quite have?
I don't think they have the depth in defence anymore that they used to have. And I'd go back to Perrin, was obviously swapped in for Szczesny. I'd be concerned if I was a Juventus fan about them being able to achieve this, you know, or continue this long-term success with the back four there. Even if you remove Spinazzola and you allow for Alexandro to come back in, I think it's that central area of the defence that Allegri, you think back a few years when Allegri lost, I believe it was Tevez, Vidal, Pogba and Pirlo all in one summer. But, you know, it seamlessly went past. And over the last few years, you've lost Buffon. Obviously, Bonucci went for a year, but then that entire back line isn't getting any younger. And I don't think Juve have strengthened adequately to sort of have a long-term succession to that defensive issues that they're going to have. I have my moments where I doubt Rugani. And when it comes to Mehdi Benatia, Caceres is probably about the same, but he's not played very much for Lazio. So
yeah, well, I think the fact that he's not played at Lazio is telling. If Mehdi Benatia was at Lazio, he'd play every week. I think Benatia's a couple of levels above Caceres, personally. I mean, Rugani's bust at this level anyway. I think he could do a job at the tier below, but for Juventus, I know he scored at the weekend. He's just not at that level.
They brought Decilio in as well. You know, the mistake he made against Atalanta midweek. And, you know, it's just they've not... They need to go for that level above, and it's whether they've got the financial clout, particularly after they spent, let's say, a huge chunk of their budget on Ronaldo. And who do they go for? We spoke about them potentially buying Donnarumma as a replacement for Buffon long term, but is there anybody in Italy, which is often where they would go and cherry pick? You know, as they have in the past with the likes of Pjanic and Bernardeschi, and, you know, where are the centre halves in Italy that they choose from, I suppose, if they're not going to compete with the likes of PSG and Manchester City for top quality defensive reinforcements?
Yeah, well, this is because they had Caldara too, and then they decided to give him to pass him on as part of the crazy summer that was. Right, let's move on from that, because Dava's said enough about that game. And Vito, we'll come to you. Napoli 3, Sampdoria 0. The big story from this, obviously, is nothing to do with Napoli winning. It's the fact that Fabio Quagliarella didn't get the record.
It's a shame that he did not get it, but to equal the record set by the great Gabriel Batistuta is still a great achievement in itself. And to do that at 36 years old is even more remarkable. So I think he'll still be happy with that. For the game, it's...
Just what Quagliarella should do is not play for the rest of this season, say that he was injured in that match, and then start next season or the season after really well, and then just decide that he can add those two things together and he can have like a 24-game run or something. Kev, what do you think?
Oh, well, I did wonder if he was injured on Saturday, because you didn't see him very much. I was more surprised, because I hadn't seen the Italy announcement until I looked after the game, that he'd been called up. No, okay, he's doing great, and he's, you know, he's still belying his years. But you think Italy are in a position where they need to be looking to the future and trying to sort of build something. And I think it's that argument that it's only a training, you know, it's a training exercise. There's no games. He's not gonna gain another cap. It's why have him in and around the squad? I don't know.
I know, I quite like it because who else are they gonna? Because they've got Kevin Lasagna's in there, Domenico Berardi.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
Moyes Ken is in there, and he's not done everything he could to get in there. And Immobile has been tried. It doesn't seem to work. Balotelli is Balotelli. Belotti, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to work either. Why not just give Quagliarella his one last shot at it, I guess. I think it's quite a nice gesture. Maybe it'd be different if it was an important situation, but no, I'm all for it. I love Quagliarella. Give him whatever he wants. Let him be captain. Let him play. Put him on penalties, free kicks, whatever he wants. All right. But Vito, the game itself.
Napoli, you'd think they would deserve the points because they've got a stronger team and they took their chances. But I must say it was also a bit of defensive suicide on Sampdoria's part, especially with the two goals in the first half. With the cross from Callejon to set up Milik, no one was able to cut out that cross. And then for the second goal, Insigne wasn't well marked and he was free to shoot at Odero. And the scary thing about that is that Odero, he's going to be bought outright at the end of the season, and he's a young goalkeeper, but I don't think he's anywhere as promising as Donnarumma or Alex Meret at Napoli. I find him to be very inconsistent. So, yeah, I reckon that was a bizarre decision.
Yeah, he's one of those. He always feels like he's never quite in control. He always looks rushed or a little bit panicked. And it must just strike nerves into his teammates, because I've been there a few times this season. And when the ball is around and people aren't completely relaxed, they're not completely composed, and there is that little distrust there, and obviously that's going to play into how he feels as well. It's not an ideal situation. Over to Napoli then, Kev. It's looking like Marek Hamsik has played his last game for the club, which I know he spoke about the temptation to move to China in his autobiography and that, but this seems premature.
Yeah, I have to keep reminding myself that he's still only 31. I know there's an argument that he's been at Napoli for just over 10 years now, and you know it's then hard to go to another Serie A club, you know, if you're just going for game time. But you just think, you know, we spoke off air about he can't do it week in, week out anymore, but they will have injuries, you know, and they'll need his experience at some points later in the season, maybe even if that's in the Europa League. And you wonder just whether he could have held off to the summer and then maybe reevaluated what he was going to do. Because it just feels really premature.
It's strange, isn't it? Because after 520 games, you do still feel like he has a little bit more to offer. And it is kind of shocking that he's only 31, because he's not been able to play full 90-minute games for the last 2 years. Last season, we used to say on the pod that if you wanted a surefire way to win money, put all of your money on Marek Hamsik being taken off between the 65th and the 75th minute, because it happened every single week because he couldn't do it. It is strange, but at the same time, yeah, if they're going to be challenging on more than one front, you would expect he's useful to keep around, even for his presence in the dressing room. Because we spoke about Zielinski last week and how it's probably his time to take over that position now. But is he going to be as comfortable doing it without Hamsik there to kind of to hold his hand or to be there in training to help him deal with situations? I don't know. It's a difficult situation. You do feel like he just has a lot more to offer there in some capacity. And it's hard to work out. But let's move on again. We'll go quickly through the rest of the scores because my voice is not going to hold out for too much longer. Empoli 2, Chievo 2. This was strange, but Vito, I'll come to you because you love Caputo and he's scored 11 goals in 22 games and he's not in the Italy squad.
It's very strange considering that, as we mentioned earlier, someone like Kevin Lasagna made the team and he's only scored one or two goals this season. Caputo is probably the main reason why Empoli would have a chance of surviving relegation this season. He's another Italian late bloomer. And he knows how to take his chances very well too. He's got great goal sense, but he's a very good finisher as well. I really hope that he maintains this run so Empoli can stay up. And, yeah, if this situation where Italy strikers, the ones who are in their prime, aren't picking up form, or even if the youngsters are not taking that step as yet, we might have to see the Azzurri pick up another veteran striker like Caputo out of necessity, just so we can find someone who can actually put the ball in the net.
I know I stuck up for Quagliarella, and I don't mean to stick the boot in on Caputo, but it's a sorry state of affairs, isn't it, where we're talking about a 36-year-old Quagliarella and Empoli striker to be coming to the Italy squad to solve their problems, given the hype that so often surrounds Ciro Immobile and Andrea Belotti.
But this is where, if you're Caputo, you must look at that squad and think, okay, people are being picked on merit because Quagliarella's, significantly, you could argue, even older than him. And then you think, well, then what have I done not to get in when Vito adds that Lasagna's in there?
Yeah, it's an unusual one. Anyway, moving swiftly on, Udinese 1, Fiorentina 1, Kev. This is Fiorentina in a nutshell, isn't it? Because they've been looking good in recent weeks. Then they go to Udine and they can't beat them.
Yeah, obviously the arrival of Luis Muriel seemed to give them a little bit of a attacking edge that they were missing before. Because, I'm going to forget now, but there was the period where they went five or six games without scoring. Did they have consecutive nil-nils? But
yeah, there were. It might have been one goal in seven matches or something.
Yeah, so they seem to get that out of their system, and now they're shipping goals like nobody's business a lot, or you're just looking really inconsistent. And then, you look at what they did in the Coppa Italia, and you just think, that's what makes me doubt that they will get into the European places this year.
And the fact that it's so competitive up there too.
Mm.
You do have these teams who have been doing it all season, really. But
because where you lay blame, I suppose, is the other thing that people are looking at.
Mm.
I was reading somewhere that Pioli's getting a little bit more time than would possibly be afforded because of the situation everybody at the club had to deal with last year with Astori's sad passing. But at some stage, if they want to kick on, then somebody has to get to the bottom of where their problems lie.
Yeah, it could be a case of Pioli sees out this season and then they cut their ties. But where do they even go from there? Like, what's the next logical step for them? Because they would be usually looking at coaches of the level of the likes of Atalanta and Sampdoria, but Gasperini wouldn't go to Fiorentina from Atalanta, and I doubt Gianpaolo would either. So, and they would kind of fit with the kind of football they want to play in Florence. So I don't really know what the plan would be. Vito, I'm going to make you talk about Genoa because they did let Piontek go, but it doesn't really matter because they've got Antonio Sanabria, who has scored 2-2.
He's proven to be a decent acquisition for the Grifone. And it's interesting to note that Sanabria was at Roma about 5 years ago, but he was very young then. And around that time, not many Serie A clubs were giving youngsters a chance, as well as Roma being in the title race slightly. Say slightly because they obviously fade off often, which is a bit of a shame. But he's had that experience in Spain with Real Betis, and now he's in Genoa where, there's not as much pressure to perform like at Roma. And perhaps he might benefit with that, especially with a coach like Cesare Prandelli, who seems to be having a bit of a career revival of his own.
Yeah, well, if he gets the service that Piontek was getting, who knows? Kev, there was something from this game that you particularly enjoyed.
Yes, the assist for the goal.
It was good, wasn't it?
It was, because I had a note at first. Kouame for Genoa rose with two defenders and then was rolling around injured as Sanabria struck the ball home. And I thought, oh, he's got a stray. He's got a stray elbow, or maybe the back, you know, he's headbutted the back of somebody's head. And it turns out he just took his eye off the ball and it hit him square in the face and then landed to the to his stroke partner. And it was just, it just tickled me ever so slightly.
It's so funny because they footballers play everything at such a high level that you do forget how precise everything is. So it's nice to have these little reminders sometimes that they can make simple mistakes too, which is great. And then the last game was, well, it was the one I was at. I was at another 0-0 this week. Spal-Torino wasn't the best of games. It was nice because, for personal reasons, obviously, it meant that I have seen every Serie A team in the flesh this season. And Spal's a really nice stadium to go to, the Paolo Mazza. I was there. It was either at the beginning of last season or before that, the year before. I can't remember. Quite possibly the beginning of last season. And they hadn't redeveloped it fully. So the end where the away fans are and the far side, the side away from the dugouts and the press area, didn't have a roof on. And it was a really nice stadium then. And then going back today, it's so much nicer. The atmosphere there is always really good. Spal fans are great. And it's just a shame because they haven't been rewarded for their support on the pitch this season, because Spal have only won twice at home all year. They've not won at home in their last 9 games now, I think it is. And it's quite strange because they started the season so brightly and we were praising them not only for getting results but for playing quite a decent brand of football, which they did last season too. And it's kind of slowed down quite dramatically there, and you would like to see them get back to it, because they will probably need to now, because Bologna have parted ways with Pipo and Zaghi, so they might actually pick up some points. Pressure's probably on Spal. But there was something I enjoyed from this game, which was Nicolas Nkulu got sent off rightly. 2 yellow cards, no complaints. Unless you are Walter Mazzarri. Because in the press conference afterwards, he was so angry that he was doing demonstrations of fouls on himself. It was fantastic. He was playing the role of Belotti and these imaginary defenders. So at one point it seemed like he had 4 arms the way he was grabbing himself. It was amazing. And he was slapping his chest, slapping his hands, clapping, screaming at journalists really intensely, but not aggressively. It was weird. He was just so passionately explaining his points and the journalists were loving it. Like, yeah. But
And this is the person that had some time off earlier in the season for, let's say, a stress-related issue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's mad. Mazzarri is crazy. And you would hope that someone will be able to control him. What I noticed about going to the press conference is all of the coaches have someone sit beside them, obviously, like the press officer. Mazzarri's, I don't know if it's Mazzarri's decision or Torino's, that their press guy just kind of stands in the background. So Mazzarri often sits there alone. So if he gets asked a question, he just answers it. Whereas a lot of the time the press officer was like, no, you're not doing that. Or they will decide who to go to. Mazzarri just kind of jumps around the room himself, which is interesting. But maybe if he got someone to help him with that situation, he wouldn't have quite as much stress on his hands. Because my voice is about to stop. So I think we should stop. Because the audio version of the podcast will have more, because I've spoken to Dov, so I'll add that in. But I'm not going to make it through another 5 minutes. So that's all we have time for. That's all my throat has time for. Kev, thank you again for joining us this week.
It's my pleasure. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao. And Vito, thanks to you.
Hi, it's Connor. It's enjoyable once again.
And for everyone listening, of course, head over to ForzaItalianFootball.com for all of your Serie A match coverage, Champions League coverage, Italian international coverage, Europa League coverage, Coppa Italia coverage. Because we're at the games and no other English-speaking Italian website is. So stick with us. Follow us on Instagram at ForzaItalianFootball, on Facebook at ForzaItalianFootball, and on Twitter at Serie A FFC. But if you look up ForzaItalianFootball, you will find us there too. And that is all there is for me to say. Until next time, so it's ciao for now.
Tifosi e con trombe e bandiere, accompagniamo la squadra del cuore, con il grido, oh Parma, sei forte! Batteremo le squadre avversarie, mai nessuno li potrà fermare, sono forti e sanno lottare, fanno gol, sempre gol, del campionato son la gloria. Forza Parma, questo è il grido di battaglia, Forza Parma, Forza Parma, di gol, sempre gol.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.